Okay. So, Lee, codependency. It's a word that people often brandy about. They hear it in terms of addiction, and you using it kind of in terms of for people to understand codependency, and then through that, really have a, I suppose, clean slate towards moving into love. I didn't put that very well, but perhaps you can seeg that a little better than I did.
Good evening, Lindsay. Thank you for this opportunity to be with your wonderful listeners this evening. Mm-hmm. It's great to be back in studio. Codependency, I think, is a lifelong thing. And I think that it's got to do with our understanding our origins, our family origins, and how we related to each other there, and how over the years we developed denial patterns and defense mechanisms to deal with the trauma that we were going through in one's home. Mm. And so codependency, yes, has been around for many years. And some very clever people wrote a book in the 70s that I'll talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But codependency for me is really about understanding and getting in touch with my own identity. As a codependent, my way of coping in a toxic family environment is almost to chameleon. So to lose my identity, mm-hmm. and to play small so that I do not get shouted at, or that mm-hmm. I don't get into trouble.
As you said, as a defense. Is it also about knowing what is my stuff and what is your stuff? Because mostly we project stuff, we take other people's stuff on.
Totally.
It's quite tricky in toxic environments to do that, though.
And also I think I call it an emotional, the emotional layer is like a skin layer, like the top of our skin. Mm. And when we're young and we're learning about relationships, it's very fragile. So where do I start and where do you end? It morphs, you know, and if there's healthy attachment, if you look at Bowlby's attachment theories, if there's healthy attachment with an infant and a parent, both parents, then that can be quite smooth sailing. Mm. However, if there's toxic environments, that attachment can get disrupted. Mm. And where you end and where I begin gets very confused.
Mm. Mm. I mean, there's a lifelong search to find out about identity. Is it accurate to say that most people aren't aware of the level of codependency?
Totally. And I think that I love that question, Lindsay. I think that at different times in our lives, like a baby is completely dependent on its parents. Mm. Mm. And to expect it to be independent is a little bit silly, as is an older person, an old person. Mm. They're going living backwards again through life. So in a way, they do become dependent again. Mm. And I think that in the middle, what I call is from, say, teenage years to before you start getting really old and needing to be dependent on other people, I call that the middle. And there it gets like really messy and confusing. And I think that the literature that's been coming out in the last 40 years has been really beautiful in understanding where do I start, where do you end, and how do we do that lovingly.
I know that codependency is a word that's bandied around in addiction. You use it in terms of understanding codependency in order to find love. Is it? You need to understand it in order to find healthy love, or explain that link for us.
I'm a raging codependent. I've been in recovery for 10, in September I'll be 10 years that I've been in recovery from alcohol addiction, drug addiction, codependency and love addiction. So codependency for me is probably my core addiction. So when I was very young, I grew up in a toxic environment. I was orphaned and given up for adoption, and those activated that trauma activated the
night on Cape Talk.
We're coming up to the midnight
codependency within me. So that's my core addiction. So when I got older and I couldn't use people anymore, it wasn't working to fill this hole in my soul. I started using drugs and alcohol to try and fill that hole. And 10, 15, 20 years later is when I hit my rock bottom. And I came into recovery, and I'm very, very lucky that my codependency I recognized from the onset. So I've been working my codependency recovery plus the others alongside each other. And there is, I was speaking to my brother this evening, and he was going like, how do you do it? I said, listen, there are days that I'm really on top of it, and there are other days that I really, I'm really, really bad at it.
So let's get practical, because people are hearing you've got a codependency and it's your primary. I mean, people, tell us how it manifests, because if you're battling with it, it must manifest in some way.
Good question.
Let's boil it down to a way that listeners can understand, because otherwise it's like, hang on the one hand, alcohol, they can understand that, but codependency, mm-hmm. not so much.
Okay, so maybe I could talk about patterns of codependency.
Okay.
So we've got denial patterns, and there you would have, I could read one or two, is I'm having difficulty in identifying what I'm feeling. So I deny, say you and I go in a relationship, and you will say, well, there's a joke that says that when you, a codependent asks a husband, how am I feeling?
Yeah.
They don't know how they're feeling.
Yeah.
So it's learning, they deny their feelings so that they can make the other person feel good and happy about themselves, so that there's no spotlight on them.
So you pretend that you like the football that he's watching, because otherwise you've got to make a scene, and you actually admit that, you know, football is a lovely sport, but it really doesn't knock your socks off.
Yeah. Another very well played out scenario is mums that will say, people say, how are you doing, mum? And I'm like, I'm fine. My kids are fine. My husband's fine. Mm. No, but how are you? No. Johnny's doing really well at sport. And we lose that identity, because we're feeling that we have to put other people ahead of ourselves. Mm. And there's time for that. When we've got a suckling baby, there is a time for, like, I'm really tired. It's like, suck it up. You've got to feed babies. Like, get on with it. Mm. But when it becomes a pattern, when it becomes a denial pattern, and it almost becomes pathological, then we, as a system, as a human, start collapsing.
Mm. So the denial is really about wanting to be liked and loved, because if you state how you're feeling, somebody might not like the way you're feeling. So it's rather to be, as you say, be more chameleon and blend. And that's often what children who adopted learn to do.
Yeah. And I think also there's this altruistic thing of putting other people ahead of ourselves.
Mm.
You know, we're growing up in an environment where we're bullying is one of the things that's coming out in the fore, in the social media, and it's coming up, and we're going, okay, well, you know, she stood up for herself, or he stood up for herself, and it's like, okay, to what extent? So that boundary, that line is being blurred. So it's really about, how do I stand up for myself, look after myself in the face of danger. Mm. That's also, you know, can I be altruistic? And I'm like, well, am I being like a great mom if I'm being unconditional? I'm doing everything for them? Not so much, because I'm not teaching them that I also have value and I also have needs that need to be met.
Mm.
So that's why I say it's lifelong. You know, we learn how to respect ourselves and respect each other on this continuum. And I think that to some degree, we're all codependent.
In terms of the example you gave of not being connected with your feelings and being able to express that, you know, that's a tricky one. And I don't think many people would necessarily label themselves codependent, because they're not able to do that 100% of the time.
Mm. But exactly, it's a continuum. Mm. It's like, I can be like right at the, like now I've been 10 years in recovery, I was probably right at the top of the spectrum 10 years ago.
But is this word not something that is recovery speak?
Yeah, but keep in mind though that, say, not every codependent is an addict or an alcoholic, just as not necessarily every addict or alcoholic is a codependent.
Mm.
My research is that probably most alcoholics and addicts are codependents. I think that's the core addiction. But I wouldn't say that every codependent is an addict or an alcoholic.
Mm. Well, you know, my understanding is a lot of codependents are the family of the alcoholics and those who are addicts. It's very tricky to understand that with the best intentions, you're trying to love and be supportive. You actually are supporting somebody else's addiction. I think that's the hardest thing for a parent or a family member of somebody who is in addiction. Tell us about that.
I'm married to an addict.
Okay.
My brother is an addict, and my son is possibly an addict. So okay. My codependency has brought me to my knees in different ways.
Mm.
And I think what you're talking about is enabling behavior, where the codependent, the family member, will try and control the using. So that
and not understand that it's out of their control.
Out of their control. So there are various ways that, that codependents can get help. You know, there are 12-step programs. There's Al-Anon. There's Nar-Anon. Al-Anon is for alcoholics, family members. Nar-Anon is for addicts, family members and friends. And then there's CODA for whoever, you know, the 12-step programs. And you can go and look on the various
But now you're saying learning to love. Who are you learning to love? Other people or yourself?
Firstly, yourself.
Okay. So isn't it funny that I was thinking of it as a way into relationships with others, but it's mostly an understanding of loving yourself, valuing yourself, who you are and how you're feeling.
Totally. I think that we're each of us are created with a footprint, you know, with a when I say a footprint, I mean an imprint of, and we have an experience of life and relationships. And we get to a point where we have what is possibly known as an emotional rock bottom, where one goes, the way I've been dealing with relationships, and it could be at the end of a first love, it could be at the end of a first marriage, it could be at the end of the fifth marriage. But we get to a point where you're going, what I'm doing is not working. And that's the work that I do, is that I show that it's not, he or she is not bad and you are not bad. It's just that together you've actually brought it. He or she is actually your healer and your teacher and has brought you to this place where I can show you what is your stuff and what is their stuff. And together we can start showing what is true love and what is beauty, you know, and it's. Yeah, it's not making bad, you know, the other person bad, because they actually are teachers.
I'm chatting with Lee Mansell, who's a therapist, and she's involved with the work of codependency. If you'd like to comment or chat with her or ask her a question, number to dial is 021-446-0567. You can also WhatsApp 072-5671-567. It was a long, hard journey for you. You've turned that around and now you are assisting people. Is that the work often of people who have figured out that it's long and it's hard and we can help each other?
Exactly, Lindsay. I've been on and off a therapist for the past, say, 7 years, and I stopped counseling about 2 years ago, and I went into a completely different industry, and I'm very glad to be back. But that taught me that that my pain means something, you know, and I have to, the experiences that I've had are not for nothing, and that I can't necessarily tell you how you feel, but I can hold a mirror and show you your truth and help you to get in touch with your intuition so that you can best live your life. I'm not the oracle. I do not have all the answers. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm here to hold your hand. I call myself a courage mentor. So I encourage people to get in touch with their truths. And I see often that the truth, let me use an example. I've got bipolar. And I had this truth that I would not be able to take care of myself financially because I've got bipolar. And once I realized that, but that's not the truth, things started shifting. My whole, like, so it was a truth, but it wasn't the truth. And that's what I come. And obviously we look at codependency as a doorway into understanding ourselves and each other. So that's what I love doing.
Now, you don't only work with individuals. How does it work with groups? Is it about cross-sharing?
I love group work. It's one of the really magical parts about being a therapist. I studied at SACAP, and one of the modules that it was facilitation. And on Wednesday night, I'm very excited to be doing a talk at the 8 o'clock club, and that's where there will be a group of us that will be talking together. And then I have my group that starts on Monday that I can post on or send to you if you'd like some more information, your listeners. But I love group work because I can show up and I can plan for the evening for our session, but there's a kind of magic that kind of takes over that people, I've got the rugrat, I don't know how it is, what's a rugrat? The skeleton, that
the
we can
bare bones.
Yeah. But there's a magic about people that rock up, and I really believe that the universe brings the right people together for the group. And we each share. we've each are a treasure trove of knowledge and experience. So I'm definitely not the oracle. I am just the facilitator. I bring everyone together, and together we make magic and we come to understand ourselves and each other.
But how would somebody say, I need to go to talk about codependency? You spoke about, you had a list and you said one of the things is not being able to say how you feel. How else would people say, oh yes, that's me. I do that. Because we might do it, but it might not be problematic.
So low self-esteem patterns. Mm. So I have a difficulty making decisions. I judge everything I say, think, or do harshly as never good enough. I'm embarrassed to receive recognition, praise, or gifts.
Repeat that one. I think that's important.
I'm embarrassed to receive recognition, praise, or gifts. I do not ask others to meet my needs or desires. I value others' approval of my thinking, feeling, and behavior over my own.
Mm-hmm. And that's a hard one, because a lot of people like to be loved and care about what other people say. And it's important that we don't not care, but we shouldn't put too much stock because other people just often projecting their own stuff onto us. And it's about separating that out.
I think it's such an interesting time that we live in. I see that there's this place that we project our stuff onto others and others project their stuff onto us. And I realize that I mustn't take that on, but I'm also not an island. Mm. So there's a need to be valued. Like if I was just living independently and I could just retrain my mind to think positively and loving thoughts about myself, then I don't know if we would have this existence that we have. Mm. So it's what I go from codependency to interdependency, where it's the links together like this. Codependency, okay, I'm using my fingers, you're not going to see on here. So codependency is almost the two rings going three quarters over each other. Interdependence is just where the rings just touch. So there's a little bit of you and a little bit of me that we connect on, and the rest is very much individual.
With me in the studio is Lee Mansell. Lee, hi. Once again, if you can just remind listeners about codependency, how they can find you at the 8 o'clock club this Wednesday.
Hi, Lindsay. Thank you. Yes, the 8 o'clock club is at Erin Hall on Wednesday evening. And as the name suggests, it's at 8 o'clock. We will be discussing codependency, and there will be a question and answer time and coffee afterwards. I understand that it is 60 Rand for most people to enter, and 40 Rand for pensioners. So please go and have a look on www.8oclockclub.co.za.
And if people want to find you independently?
On www.leejoy, that's LeeIGHJoy.co.za.
Okay. Well, we are coming up to the news. Thank you for bringing your energy into the studio, and I hope that you have a great time.